But what I'm saying, though, is everything we're hearing is that people still need a vacation. They still need time with their family.
I need
a vacation.
They
still need a break from their work. There you go.
Anybody related to this market in any way, shape, or form needs a vacation.
Hi, and welcome to NPR's Planet Money. I'm Laura Conaway. Today is Wednesday, October 15th. It's about 4:42 p.m. here in New York. Adam Davidson, my colleague, is hanging out in Brooklyn. He's got some numbers for us. Adam, what are the Planet Money indicators?
Well, the indicator that we don't care about is the Dow. Normally, we try and ignore it. It did go down a lot today, 733 points, almost 8%.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. And any normal time in the world, that would be unbelievable headline, shocking news. It's not even the biggest drop in the last week or so. The number we care more about, the TED spread, which is the measure of how the credit markets are doing, how money's flowing through the system, it's kind of ugly. It went up to 4.37. It's only a tenth of 1%. Up from yesterday, not the worst news, but we really want to see that number coming way, way, way down. We want that under one, and it just keeps going up. It went down a little bit a couple days ago, but it's been going up today, and that's a little disturbing.
I talked to your buddy Will Aston Reese today.
He's our favorite money market interbank trader. He's the one who tells us from the front lines if money is flowing from bank to bank and through the economy. So what did he say?
He said that he's not moving anything except treasury bills.
Yeah, that's bad. That means banks are not willing to lend to any bank. They just want the safest possible investment. That's scary.
Yeah, he said that people are actually afraid that if they bought into a security that they couldn't sell it.
Right, because no one else wants it. You don't want to be the first one. And I know what Will hopes, which frankly I think is what most people in the U.S. are hoping, is that once this plan that was announced yesterday is fully understood, that will restore some degree of confidence. Money will start moving. No bank wants to be the first one to jump in. So
they're like penguins at the edge of the water.
Right. And you know, Will said he told me the other day that we'll probably see a trickle, a drop before we see a flood. So, but we haven't even seen that trickle. So, so we have to keep monitoring this.
Adam Davidson, thank you. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you, Laura. See
Take
you tomorrow.
Care. So that was my buddy, Adam Davidson. Meanwhile, we're waiting for tonight's presidential debate. John McCain and Barack Obama are expected to spend a lot of time talking about the economy, and we're going to take a look at their plans in just a minute. First, I want to get to this guy, Patrick Janelle. Adam this week blogged something saying, if you're having trouble getting credit, get in touch with us. We want to know it. A responder, Patrick Janelle. Patrick lives in Los Angeles, and he recently got a surprise in his American Express statement. Patrick says he thought he was doing all right. He was paying on time. He's been shrinking his debt. But he says American Express just lowered his credit limit by $500 right out of the blue.
I did call the customer service because I was, you know, obviously a little concerned, and I would prefer that it wouldn't be lowered. So I was attempting to have that renegotiated. And after speaking with a couple of people, I spoke with the supervisor, and basically, the supervisor said that American Express has been reassessing its own risk, going through some risk management, and based on my credit history, my credit score, they had decided to lower the limit. And I said, you know, well, this has never happened to me before. I know that there are a few small snags in my credit score, but I didn't think that it would warrant them lowering my limit by any amount. But what it sounded like, American Express was just concerned with its own risk, and if they were able to rein in any credit that they were giving out in any small places, it sounded like that's what they were taking care of. And moreover, the woman told me that they had actually had to take this same action or similar action with some of their cardholders whose credit was rated better than mine.
So it wasn't like yours was the worst and therefore it went out. It was yours and other
right.
people who were in better
yeah,
shape.
Exactly. She did mention that it was mine and other people's that they were taking the same action too.
So you see global credit crunch here.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny because, you know, I wasn't really expecting to see very much. And I actually had taken the attitude for a while that, you know, I have personal finances that I need to deal with. But I really didn't relate any of the decisions I made in the past or the current credit situation I'm facing now. I didn't really relate that to the global economy or even the national economy. These were really, you know, personal decisions that I made that I was affected by. So this is really the first time that I'm seeing something that I really do feel like I'm affected by something larger than just my own personal decisions.
That was listener Patrick Janelle filling us in on his personal brush with the credit crunch. Now let's do a little bit of politics. Last week, Planet Money reporter Dan Costello talked to Richard Green. Green is a professor of real estate and economics, two things that have been going together a lot lately, although not very happily. Green teaches at the University of Southern California, and he is backing Senator Barack Obama. Green has got some issues with Senator McCain's plan for buying up mortgages and saving the economy.
The idea is that the Treasury would buy mortgages directly from lenders at their face value.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had a subprime mortgage that was originated with a $100,000 balance, the government would just buy it for $100,000 and then refinance the borrower into something that's presumably more favorable based on the current value of the house, based on an affordable interest rate, et cetera. What they're basically doing is injecting money back into the people who invested in these mortgages as opposed to the home buyers who owe money on these mortgages.
So what you're saying is that the money would go to investors, rather not necessarily to Main Street, but it would go to the people that own the loan or go to the people that own the security that own the loan.
That's correct. That's my understanding is it would be largely an awful lot of the benefit would go to the people who own the mortgages right now, go to the investors.
And under the plan, as you understand it, would the federal government be paying, you know, below market value or the current market value?
No,
or, I mean, the other thing we keep hearing is we have no idea what these are worth.
Well, that's just it. Is my understanding is the government would be paying face value. So that's the point. Suppose a lender, and lender means a lot of things, but mm-hmm. let's just use the word lender generically. So the investor in the mortgage bought a security with a face value of $100.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what that's worth right now. Under the McCain proposal, as I understand it, what they're saying is we're going to give you $100 anyway. And so what that does is make that investor whole for that bad investment that they made. Now, the problem that we have is we know that these things are worth a lot less than that, but mm-hmm. we don't know how much less. So, for example, Merrill Lynch had a fire sale of mortgages a few months ago
right.
where they sold securities at 22 cents on the dollar.
Right.
Okay, I am reasonably sure that in an existential sense, those securities were worth more than 22 cents, but they were certainly worth less than the dollar
mm-hmm.
of face value. So the right number, the economically correct number, is somewhere in between, but we don't know what that
between
is.
Between 22 and 22 cents and the dollar, which is a lot of room.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And so the thing about this proposal is if they're giving the investor a dollar, again, one is they're basically holding them harmless from the investment decision that they made. But the other thing is we really don't know what it will cost because we don't know what the difference is between the real value of these things and what they're paying for it.
And so do you think at the end of the day this approach is a smart approach right now, or are there other approaches that you think would be...
Well, I don't like it. I mean, I don't like it because what it basically does is it allows irresponsible lenders to get all their money back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
and explain that to us.
Well, again, it is because they're offering face value for the mortgages. A lender who made a subprime mortgage, and that lender could be Countrywide, mm-hmm. that lender could be WaMu, that lender could be nobody you've ever heard of who bought the security, but who provided the capital for making these mortgages that we should have known could never be been paid back, we're saying we're going to let you off the hook. We're going to give you all your money back. And so there's this injection.
So what does that mean? So just to bring it back to the average listener, what does that mean? So if the government takes $300 or $600 or $1.5 trillion and pays off these mortgages to lenders at face value, what does it mean to the average homeowner who is with a distressed mortgage? That means they're fine? It's all sealed up? What does that mean for them at the end of the day?
Well, it depends on the next step. It means for – so the next step of the plan is that they would also originate new mortgages for troubled – or I guess they said for all homeowners at the value of their house or something related to the value of their house at a low interest rate.
And rewrite them a new 30-year loan.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, that's very helpful if you have a subprime loan, but we don't really know what the value of those houses are. So to try to figure out what is the right amount for the mortgage to be is an issue. It also means that for those who have always paid their loans on time, who have equity in their houses already, they get no benefit from this.
Right. Isn't the worry that so what about the people who are paying their mortgages? If you find out the government is starting to pay off mortgages to people that aren't paying it, won't that incentivize some people to?
It sets a bad incentive.
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
Yeah.
But the second thing is what it basically is going to do is say that taxpayers are going to have to transfer money because ultimately this is going to want we're going to have higher taxes at some point to pay for this. So what this means is the taxpayer who has equity in his house, who has been responsible, is going to be transferring money directly to two types of agents. They're going to be transferring money to financial institutions who made the loans, and they're going to be transferring money to borrowers who are in trouble. And some of those borrowers are in trouble for no fault of their own. It's, you know, as we've seen job losses, we have seen house prices deteriorate in ways that none of us could have imagined a few years back. But some of these borrowers were, you could make a case, irresponsible, or they were people who never had any equity in the house to begin with. They didn't save for a down payment. And so you're seeing this massive transfer from responsible people to investors, to lenders, and to borrowers who may have not been so responsible as part of this plan. And I think the thing I find especially disturbing about it is when house prices come back and when financial markets come back, so far as I know, there's no upside for the taxpayer
because
from the plan. Because they've just basically they've bought the mortgages and
at face value today. Is and what we heard about with the Paulson plan is that the federal government would buy the toxic debt from these banks, and perhaps they would pay a little bit more than they're worth now. Perhaps they pay a little bit less. But if the market came back in a few years, there's a possibility under that proposal that they would make their the federal government would make their money back or near make the money back.
That's
under this
correct.
Plan.
Yes, in principle, the federal government, if it was really smart, could wind up with a small profit.
And you're saying under this plan, that might not be, that could be less.
As far as I could tell, there's no mechanism in this plan to allow for the government to do that. That's right.
That was Richard Green of USC's Lusk Center speaking with Planet Money's Dan Costello. Today, I went looking for someone to talk about Senator Obama's plan. I found Diana Furchtgott-Roth of the Hudson Institute. Furchtgott-Roth is an economist specializing in employment, and she is backing Senator McCain. She says Obama's economic prescriptions, and they are prescriptions, plural, at this point, would tax too much and cost too much.
I guess what sticks out is that in neither of these plans does he take away the tax on people making $250,000 or more, even though he's obviously trying to create jobs and trying to stimulate the economy. And there are a lot of small businesses who reach that threshold, the $250,000. And so it seems to me the simplest thing would be to get rid of his tax increase on people making $250,000 or more. And that's what strikes me that he has not done. He says he's taken off the tax from the oil companies. He was proposing to tax oil companies, but in light of the price of oil going down, below $80 a barrel. He has dropped the tax on oil companies, but he hasn't dropped the tax on small businesses.
So when you say he has not taken the tax off, I gather that you think it would be good for the economy to go ahead and reduce taxes on businesses of that size.
Well, taxes are going to automatically go up January the 1st, 2011, unless something is done. Right now, the top tax rate is 35%, and I think that Congress should extend that and stop it going up to 39.6%, which is the amount it would go up on January the 1st, 2011, if nothing were done.
So what happens to the economy if taxes go up in that bracket?
Well, all academic studies show that increasing taxes results in less of a product. So if you raise taxes on something or someone, you're going to have less of that. And if you raise taxes on work and business, you're going to have less of those. What's interesting is that Senator Obama has proposed a $3,000 employer tax credit for jobs created over the next 2 years. So if a small business, or I think it's mostly aimed at small business, but it could be aimed at other businesses too, if they have, say, 100 employers and then they create one more job, then they get a $3,000 tax credit. But that's an accounting nightmare. What if they hire somebody to make it 101 employees and then someone quits, bringing it down to 100? What happens? Do they still get the tax credit or do they not? And it's a big incentive to hire low-wage workers because they hire one low-wage worker at minimum wage. They get the $3,000 tax credit. What happens if a firm splits up into two? How do they count the increase in workers? So Senator Obama has proposed basically an accounting nightmare with a $3,000 employer tax credit, but yet he's raising income taxes on employers, which would have the opposite effect, which would result in smaller expansion of businesses and fewer jobs created. So that was an interesting thing also. Another interesting thing where he says he's trying to create jobs is $50 billion for infrastructure.
This is the thing where he's saying we'll invest in roads and bridges and schools and so on.
Exactly, yes, that's right. That's right. But that's not a very fast way of getting jobs into the economy, because to decide that you're going to build a road, it takes some months. You have to lay it out. You have to get the property rights. To build a bridge, the same thing. It's a matter of design. So it's not something that you can start right now, day one. It takes some months to start up.
So what do you see in this time of acute crisis, in this time of response or some kind of help needing to happen right away? What do you see in Obama's plans, if anything, for immediate relief?
I don't really see anything for immediate relief. I think that what would be immediate relief would be to say that he's not going to raise taxes as he has planned to do, but he's going to spend large amount of federal money in order to fulfill his promise of tax reductions, which is really welfare to 95% of Americans.
So when you say that Obama intends to hold the line or stick to the plan of having taxes go up on businesses in the $200,000 range, you're talking about something that wouldn't happen until 2011, you say, right?
That's when it's going up currently as scheduled by Congress. But with a new president, Congress can pass these things any time. And it's not clear precisely when Senator Obama plans on passing the tax. Once, if he were elected president and with a sufficiently large Democratic majority, he could move to pass these taxes as soon as he got elected in 2009. There are some things that he said would help. For example, the small business investment expensing limit. He wants to keep that at $250,000 through the end of 2009. That was scheduled to expire at the end of this year. And that was part of this year's economic stimulus plan. And that, I believe, would be helpful because it would help small business create jobs, invest in more equipment. He has a plan for $60 billion to give a rebate, another tax rebate.
A stimulus check?
Right, stimulus checks, just like we had in May and June when those checks were mailed out then. That's $60 billion, and people might say that that would provide immediate relief, but that didn't seem to help the economy that much. It resulted in a temporary increase in spending in June, but now, right after that, the economy is worse than it was before.
How does an economist such as yourself find anyone to vote for?
Well, it is difficult, but I think that given the two candidates, given the choices that they're offering the country right now, I'm in favor of more individual choice and less government control.
If you wanted me to understand any one thing, if you wanted listeners to understand any one thing about the Obama proposals, what would you say?
I'd say that Senator Obama, it's impossible for Senator Obama to make all the spending programs that he's planning on making if you go through his website and give tax cuts to 95% of Americans and raise taxes on those making over $250,000 a year, which would slow down the economy and stop job creation. The whole thing doesn't add up mathematically, and I'd be interested to hear from any of your listeners who thinks that it does. It's going to be a vast expansion of government programs and government authority and a vast increase in the deficit.
That was Diana Furchgott-Roth with a challenge for you Obama supporters out there. You can have your say, answer that challenge, on our blog if you like. We're at npr.org/money, or drop us an email at planetmoney@npr.org. I'm Laura Conaway. That's another day on Planet Money. Thanks for listening.